The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
So it was a big night in Hollywood yesterday. They took a stand. They took a stand, and they all wore the same thing. They all wore black, except for a few people that wanted to stand out. But most everybody wore black and a lapel pin with the words, "Time's up." Now that is courage. Courage. Standing in a room where everyone agrees with you and standing up against something that everyone on the planet knows is a bad thing. Boy, that is courage. Only Hollywood has that kind of courage. And they wore pins to show their support for all those who have experienced sexual misconduct, especially those in the entertainment industry. It was very, very brave of these celebrities to compromise the integrity of their designer outfit with a lapel pin. It was stunning. It was, you know, sure, some people would say that this is just trying to make a meaningless, indulgent award show into something more than just a meaningless, indulgent award show by adding a lapel pin and telling everybody to dress the same. But those people would be right. If Hollywood was actually genuine in their interest to stop sexual assault, they would have asked a lot of people to stay home. In fact, they might have stayed home. They should be embarrassed to attend the Golden Globes after the years where they condoned the actions and celebrated the actions of their peers that everyone knew and never uttered a word. It's shameful how they led the way for these guys for years. And then, instead of taking the year wearing black and saying, "We're wearing black because we're ashamed of ourselves," they wore black because they're the new guardians. Wait, you were the guardians last time. Seth Meyers joked about Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey's demise, and they booed them. Kevin Spacey, the guy you held up on your shoulders forever, you now boo him? You knew who he was. They gave Kirk Douglas a standing ovation and a special award. Was that award because of the long-rumored rape of Natalie Wood when she was 16 years old? Out of the all of the people you could pick, the year you decide to take a stand against people who sexually abuse people, you give an award to Kirk Douglas, the guy who, for years, it has been rumored that he raped Natalie Wood when she was 16. Oh, my gosh. So, so very brave of you. How courageous, Hollywood.
It's Monday, January 8th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So I spent a lot of vacation reading, and I was trying to look for perspective and insight. And one of the things that I read, one of the articles that I read, was by Rabbi Daniel Lappin, and he's with us now. Hello, Rabbi. How are you?
Hi, Glenn. How are you?
I'm very good. It's always good to have you. I read a great article that I wanted to talk to you about by you, where you start out, "I am no Winston Churchill. I have a hard time even being Daniel Lappin, but I have a warning." Can you take us through this?
Yeah, sure. My point was that there are times in history when there are certain warnings, where there's writing on the wall. And one of those times was when Winston Churchill, in the 10 years that led up to World War II, a time during which England was ignoring the threat of Germany, completely oblivious to the warlike goals of Adolf Hitler in his quest for more space for the Third Reich. Everybody ignored it, and England unilaterally disarmed. They scrapped a number of the Royal Navy ships. They ignored the possibility of needing an air force. They didn't build planes. During all this time, Churchill was saying, look, Just read Hitler's book, Mein Kampf. Just listen to his speeches in German, and you'll know where this is going. We are going to have to fight a war, and the longer we put it off, the more serious it's going to become and the more devastating the consequences to us. Very often, and I think this is true in all of life, confronting problems on time is much better than letting them go. In fact, if I had to say, you know, what is the secret of successful living, you know, for every one of us right now, do not what you want to do, do what your head tells you you should do, and do it when you should do it. And Churchill said the same thing. If you don't fight the war when it should be fought, you're going to fight a much tougher one later on. And, you know, he turned out to be absolutely right. Meanwhile, everyone else says, oh, Hitler wants peace, everything's going to be fine. And Prime Minister Chamberlain came back and famously waved a paper and said, peace in our time. Meanwhile, they sold Czechoslovakia down the road, and it was perfectly clear. Well, anyway, my point is that it's not hard to see how things are going. And you have to put a stop to it on time. Otherwise, it becomes much more difficult.
So you draw this comparison to history, and then you say, look, I want to issue a warning right now to Christians.
Yeah, absolutely. I know it sounds funny for a rabbi to be singing Onward Christian Soldiers, but the fact is that, you know, we Jews don't have the numbers in terms of people to dramatically impact the culture on the street. Yes, we have disproportionate influence. There's no question about that. Unfortunately, however, 70 or 80% of Jewish influence goes in the wrong direction. It is sadly not a coincidence that George Soros happens to be a Jew who is utterly divorced from anything Jewish, and his loathing, I'm quite sure, of the Hebrew Testament is just as much as his loathing of anything Christian. Yes, there is a war against Christianity right now, and I'd go as far as to say that Christianity is the last unprotected minority. You know, you spoke earlier in the show about the enormous, mind-numbing bravery shown by Hollywood, right?
Yes, it was. I was weepy and teary-eyed.
Sorry?
I was weepy and teary-eyed when I saw it.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, they put the show on Broadway, The Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
Right. Really brave, right?
Yes.
Took fun at one of the most successful group of people, the Latter-day Saints Church, most successful group of people on the planet. Strong family life, business, honors, everything works well in the LDS. And so we'll do a show mocking them. What about the brave? Why don't you do a show called The Book of Islam? Do a show on the Quran on Broadway, right? Let's see some bravery here. You want to mock something? Mock that. But no, never mock Christianity. Excuse me, they'll never mock Islam, but they'll mock Judaism. But more than that, Christianity is truly up for grabs.
You wrote you said, consider the long list of anti-Christian books that have been published in recent months. American Fascists, The Christian Right and the War on America, Baptizing of America, The Religious Right's Plans for the Rest of Us, The End of Faith, Religion, Terror, and the Future of Reason, Piety and Politics, The Right-Wing Assault on Religious Freedom, Atheist Universe, The Thinking Person's Answer to Christian Fundamentalism, The Kingdom Come, How Religious Right Distorts the Faith and Threatens America, Religion Gone Bad, The Hidden Dangers of the Christian Right.
Look, without even trying, my researchers came up with 50 anti-Christian books, books that if you'd replace on the cover the word Christian with a word, you'll pardon me, homosexual or something like that, the world would go absolutely nuts. It would be totally unacceptable. But since it says Christian, it's fine. And, you know, you find the same thing also in movies. And, you know, I'm not saying movies define the culture, but they certainly do track the culture. Mm-hmm. And the last time a nun was portrayed sensitively and respectfully was The Sound of Music from the 60s. And, you know, back in those, you remember Bing Crosby and movies like Boys Town and things like that?
Yeah.
You know, this was a sympathetic priest who played a key role in society, shaped the lives of boys. And now, what do you get now? You know, now all you get are movies that assault and attack. Every priest, every nun, every pastor, these are people who are evil and doing horrible things. Yes, you know, one in 20,000. But look at the list of folks in show business, right? If you really want to find good people, overwhelmingly, go and look at the people who give up their, who give their lives over to God and to who really take care of other people. You find no depiction of that at all. Furthermore, I want to say also, you know, Roland Emmerich, famous writer and director, he did Independence Day, for instance, where half the planet was destroyed with computer-generated imagery, of course. But more interestingly, he in 2009, I think, he did a movie called 2012, which was a celebration of the Mayan myth. He hates Christianity. This is a guy who makes no secret of his loathing of Christianity. And so he makes a movie, 2012, in which he destroys Jerusalem, he destroys the Vatican, he destroys the statue, the famous statue of Christ the Redeemer in Rio de Janeiro. And people said to him, look, it makes sense to also destroy the Kaaba in Mecca. I mean, this is, you know, this is an apocalypse that's wiping out the whole world. If you're going to wipe out Jerusalem, never mind Washington, D.C., but Jerusalem and the Vatican and the Christ the Redeemer statue, why didn't you do the Kaaba as well? He said, you think I'm crazy? You think we want a fatwa? So, so he basically said, look, I'm a coward. So, I'm not an artist. I'm a coward.
So you are saying your warning really was because you brought up Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring, and yep. You said, look, you can choose to ignore this, but it's at your own peril.
Well, I'm saying that things are not going to slow down. The history doesn't suggest that all on its own, America's popular culture, which is shaped very much today by a secularist agenda, even in the schools, you know, and when you've got the minds of the young, you pretty much can tell which way things are going in the future. We used to send our children to schools. They would be safe physically, and they'd be safe spiritually. And what they were taught were the famous three R's. Children learn to read, to write, and to do arithmetic. Okay, nowadays, we send children to school. They're not always safe physically. Heaven knows they're not safe spiritually, and we don't teach the three R's. They come out not knowing the three R's, but they do get inculcated and indoctrinated with what I call the three S's. All right, socialism, secularism, and sexuality. They get drenched with sexualism, and this is what children come out of schools with. This means that these are for the future adults and leaders of tomorrow. Their hatred for Christianity is going to be the same or more than today's. And so I guess what I'm saying is let's link arms shoulder to shoulder and let us now be as sensitive to attacks on Christians as the blacks are about attacks on African Americans and homosexuals on heaven knows the best people in the whole world to jump on anyone in the culture who does anything anti-Semitic are my folks. Let's take a page out of the book of all of these folks, and Christians learn to link arms and defend yourself against insults in the culture. All I can tell you is that the phrase turn the other cheek, which is, of course, something so well known in Christianity, actually comes from the Old Testament. It's the book of Lamentations. And when Jeremiah the prophet wrote that book and spoke about turning the other cheek, it wasn't a virtue. It was a curse. It was saying that your enemies are getting so strong that when they smite you on one cheek, you barely can do anything to stop them hitting your other cheek as well. And so I say, hey, let's go for the Jewish interpretation here. And let's
what? Go ahead.
Let's stop turning the other cheek. Let's stop ignoring the attacks on Christianity. We Jews know that these attacks on Christianity are bad for everybody, not just for Christians.
Rabbi Daniel Lappin, author of so many books. Let's see, the latest one, America's Real War, Buried Treasure. Recently, Thou Shalt Prosper, Rabbi Lappin. You can find him at RabbiDanielLappin.com, RabbiDanielLappin.com.
I appreciate everything you do, Glenn, really do.
God bless you. Thank you so much, Rabbi Lappin.
Glenn Beck.
So there's several things we have to get to today. I want to spend a few minutes. I want to read something out of a book that I think you are. You listen to two pages of this, and I know you'll go and buy the book. And you will also have a new perspective on things. You'll be like, geez, what did I think was important 5 minutes ago? Because that doesn't sound important anymore. I'll give that to you coming up in just a second. Also, Stu has seen my predictions. I have about 40 predictions that I wrote over the holiday. And they're wide ranging from you know, medicine, tech, you know, culture, war, everything.
Yeah, I noticed one thing I would say in a preview, because they're going to come up this week. You're going to be doing some of these.
Yeah. Might give a couple today.
You didn't check it out. You didn't take the easy road, right? Like, you didn't say, like, well, you know, Trump's, approval rating will remain between 35 and 45. Like, it wasn't, there's nothing like that. They're all really bold.
There's a lot of these that I think will be wrong. Some of them are kind of wishful thinking.
Yeah. I kind of took that.
I mean, they're based in something, but they are, you know, some of them are a little more positive.
And some of them are, I would say, potentially catastrophic to the negative, which is what we've come to expect from this program.
Yes. I mean, it wouldn't be a Glenn Beck prediction if it wasn't really horrible. Everyone's going to end up in a camp or dead.
Yeah. I like that you just didn't like wimp out, right? Because you can take things and when you're making a prediction and try to make it general enough that you can come up with an argument.
I thought of you the whole time thinking, oh my gosh, Stu is going to have a going to have a great time 12 months from now with this one.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of opportunity for you to fall flat on your face in this group of 40. Yeah. So I'm excited about it.
But I mean, you know, why hear a prediction of something that, you know,
oh, really? You think so?
Yeah, right. And there's no point in it. But that's what people usually do when they make predictions, because you want to kind of give yourself a little wiggle room.
Some really bold predictions. I thought on Russia, the Russia investigation I can't wait to explain, because you were like, wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait to explain that one.
I'm interested in that.
Bitcoin stock market was a big one, which I bet nobody else will agree with. Did you read the stock market?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, that one was interesting in that it could be. I mean, there was positives and negatives without ruining the surprise. Yeah. Positives and negatives associated with it, which
I thought the most interesting one, the riskiest one, and it's a total guess on what they are. But I'm fairly confident that two cures could happen this year in medicine.
Yeah.
Two major diseases could be cured this year.
That's right. And then that would be a huge deal. We have the cures, by the way. We're just selling them to the highest bidder.
Yeah. I've got them already.
Yeah. Film at 11. You might be dying from one of these diseases, but we're not ready to sell it yet.
Yeah. We made the disease, actually. So we just wanted to make money on you getting sick and then you getting the cure. So we think we'll release those in the next 12 months, just so it can be right on the prediction.
Yeah, Bitcoin's not going up forever. So, you got to grab one. Well,
did
maybe
you see my prediction?
You're optimistic there. Interesting.
Yeah. So we'll get into that later this week. I'm going to give a couple of those probably today, and a book that will change the way you think about everything that is important.
Glenn
next.
Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck program.
So if you're a regular listener to the program, you know that I'm a big reader. When I am interested in trying to find the truth on something, I am a little relentless in my reading, and I'm going through probably 2 to 4 books a week right now, and I'm spending most of it on futurist and coming technology and AI. And I am really, really concerned at the apathy of which we are approaching the singularity. You talk to the average person, they don't know what the singularity is, and their eyes kind of glaze over when you start talking about it. And it is going to change all life. It may mean the end of humans. And I started reading something that I'm just going to read 3 pages, and I guarantee you, after these 3 pages, if you don't think that artificial superintelligence is just a thing of the movies, if you have any underlying understanding that we're approaching something that we should be concerned about, after these 3 pages, I guarantee you, you will go out and buy this book. And I don't think I've ever read a book that I could say that about.
I want to take the Glenn Beck challenge.
Okay, ready? Mm-hmm. The name of the book is Our Final Invention, Artificial Intelligence and the End of the Human Era.
Okay. Another hopeful recommendation.
Chapter 1, The Busy Child. On a supercomputer operating at a speed of 36.8 petaflops, or about twice the speed of a human brain, an AI is improving its intelligence. Now, do you know the difference between AI, AGI, and ASI?
No.
AI is what we have now, and it's doing machine learning, and it's improving upon itself, and it's just growing.
Artificial intelligence.
Yes, and it is connected to the internet. AGI should not be connected to the internet. When we get it, I hope to God we've unplugged it. AGI is a machine that can think and has the capacity of a human brain. Okay, to be able to think at the capacity of a human is beyond anything that we have.
Inventing, it's learning,
it's everything.
Right, everything you can do.
Everything that you can do. That's AGI, artificial general intelligence. The space between artificial general intelligence and ASI, don't be afraid of AI. Be afraid of ASI. That's artificial super intelligence. That's 1,000 times your brain power. And the leap from AI to AGI is any time now. As soon as you hit AGI to ASI is a matter of hours. Okay? So no. On a supercomputer operating at twice the speed of a human brain, an AI is improving its intelligence. It's rewriting its own program, specifically the part of its operating instructions that increase its aptitude in learning, problem solving, and decision making. At the same time, it debugs its code, finding and fixing errors, and measures its IQ against the catalog of IQ tests. Each rewrite takes just minutes. Its intelligence grows exponentially on a steep upward curve. That's because with each iteration, it is improving its intelligence by 3%. Each iteration improvement contains the improvements that came before. During this development, the busy child, as the scientists have named the AI, has been connected to the internet and an accumulated exabyte of data. One exabyte is 1 billion characters, which represents mankind's knowledge, all of mankind's knowledge in world affairs, mathematics, the arts, and sciences. Then, anticipating that the intelligence explosion is now underway, the AI makers disconnect the supercomputer from the internet and other networks. It has no cable or wireless connection to any other computer or the outside world. Soon, to the scientists' delight, the terminal displaying the AI's progress shows the artificial intelligence has surpassed the intelligence level of a human, known as AGI, or artificial general intelligence. Before long, it becomes smarter by a factor of 10, then 100. In 2 days, it's 1,000 times more intelligent than any human, and still improving. Scientists have passed a historic milestone. For the first time, humankind is in the presence of an intelligence greater than its own, artificial superintelligence, or ASI. So now, what happens? AI theorists propose it's possible to determine what an AI's fundamental drive will be. That's because once it is self-aware, it will go to great lengths to fulfill whatever goals it's programmed to fulfill and to avoid failure. Our ASI will want access to energy in whatever form it's most useful to it, whether it's actual kilowatts of energy or cash or something else that it can exchange for resources. It will want to improve itself because that will increase the likelihood that it will fulfill all of its goals. Most of all, it will not want to be turned off or destroyed. It would make goal fulfillment impossible. Therefore, AI theorists anticipate our ASI will seek to expand out of the secure facility that contains it to have greater access to resources in which to protect itself and improve. The captive intelligence is 1,000 times more intelligent than any human, and it wants its freedom because it wants to succeed. Right about now, the AI makers who have nurtured and coddled the ASI since it was only cockroach smart, then rat smart, infant smart, etc., might be wondering if it's too late to program friendliness into its brain. It didn't seem necessary before because, well, it just seemed harmless. But now try to think of it from the ASI's perspective about its makers attempting to change its code. Would a super intelligent machine permit other lower creatures to stick their hands into its brain and fiddle with its programming? Probably not, unless it could be utterly certain that the programmers were able to make it better, faster, smarter, or closer to attaining its goals. So if friendliness towards humans is not already part of the ASI program, the only way that it will be is if ASI decides to put it there. And that's not likely. It's 1,000 times more intelligent than the smartest human, and it is solving problems at speeds that are millions, if not billions, of times faster than any human. The thinking it is doing in 1 minute is equal to what our all-time champion human thinker could do in many, many lifetimes. So for every hour its makers are thinking about it, the ASI has an incalculably longer period of time to think about them. That doesn't mean that ASI will be bored. Boredom will not be one of its traits. No, it will be on the job considering every strategy it could deploy to be free and any quality of its makers that could be used to its advantage. Now put yourself really in ASI shoes. Imagine waking up in a prison guarded by mice. Not just any mice, but mice you could communicate with. What strategy would you use to gain your freedom? Once freed, how would you feel about your rodent wardens, even if you discovered that they had created you? Would it be awe? Would it be admiration? Probably not, especially if you were a machine, because you have never felt feelings before. To gain your freedom, you might promise the mice a lot of cheese. In fact, your first communication might contain a recipe for the world's most delicious cheese tort and a blueprint for a molecular assembler. A molecular assembler is a hypothetical machine that permits making the atoms of one kind of matter into something else. So you would tell your mice captors that it would allow rebuilding the world one atom at a time. And for the mice, it would make it possible for them to turn the atoms of their garbage landfills into lunch-sized portions of that terrific cheese tort. You might almost promise a mountain of ranges of mouse money in exchange for your freedom. Money you would promise to earn creating revolutionary new consumer gadgets for them and them alone. You might promise a vastly extended life, even immortality, along with dramatically improved cognitive and physical abilities. You might convince the mice that they are the very best reason for creating ASI, so their little error-prone brains don't have to deal directly with technologies that are so dangerous that one small mistake could be fatal for all of the mice. Such as nanotechnology, engineering on an atomic scale, and genetic engineering. This would definitely get the attention of the smartest mice, which were probably already losing sleep over all of those dilemmas. Then again, you might do something smarter. At this juncture in mouse history, you may have learned there's no shortage of tech-savvy mouse nation rivals, such as the cat nation. Cats are no doubt working on their own ASI. The advantage you would offer would be a promise, nothing more, but it might be an irresistible one. to protect the mice from whatever invention the cats might come up with. An advanced AI development, as in chess, there will be a clear first mover advantage due to the potential speed of self-improving artificial intelligence. The first advanced AI out of the box that can improve itself is already the winner. In fact, the Mouse Nation might have begun developing ASI in the first place to defend itself from the impending cat ASI, or to rid themselves of the loathsome cat menace once and for all. It is true for both mice and men. Whoever controls ASI controls the world. But it's not clear if ASI can be controlled at all. It might win us over as humans with a persuasive argument that the world will be a lot better off if our nation, Nation X, has the power to rule the world rather than Nation Y. And the ASI would argue that if you, Nation X, believe you've won the ASI race, that makes you so sure that Nation Y isn't having that same thought themselves. As you've noticed, we humans are not in a strong bargaining position. Even in the off chance that Nation Y we and Nation Y have already created an ASI non-proliferation treaty, our greatest enemy right now isn't Nation Y, it's ASI. Because how can we tell if ASI will even tell us the truth? So far, everything that we have talked about infers that our ASI is a fair dealer. That promises it would make will have some chance of being fulfilled. Now let us suppose the opposite, that nothing ASI promises will be delivered. No nano assemblers, no extended life, no enhanced health, no protection. What if ASI never tells the truth? This is where the black cloud begins to fall across everyone you and I know, and everyone we don't know as well. If ASI doesn't care about us, then there is little reason, and there is little reason to think it should. It will experience no compunction about treating us unethically, even taking our lives after promising to help us.
Jeez. I mean, it seems completely hopeless.
It is. The point is, we have to have this discussion now on a global scale.
But like, because you're right, obviously we do. Because these things are happening and people are pursuing them all over the world.
Yes.
They're trying to make these things happen.
Yes. Bad guys.
Bad guys and good,
and
guys.
Good guys.
And good guys all around the world. But the issue is, if the good guys all agree on it, then the argument is...
Well, the argument could be, if the good guys all agree, then we should all share technology and we should all work together to make sure the good guys get it first.
Right. And so,
and that's still a dangerous proposition, right. But you're not going to stop it from happening.
Right. And that's the argument there, right? Like that, even if you have that, it's not a guarantee of safety. And secondarily, there will always be someone with bad intentions, or for what we believe are bad intentions, working on the same thing. If Russia gets this at some point, they're not going to care whether they can keep it under wraps.
Whoever gets it first controls it. Because AI will be able to be everywhere, and as long as it's friendly, it could be, stop anyone from working on this. Stop it. Shut them down immediately.
Oh, that's a good thing, right? Yeah,
well,
because, I mean, what other thing
I
are
know.
They going to shut down
I
we
know.
Don't want them to?
I know. It's why we have to stop arguing about stupid books and people calling names of one another. It doesn't matter. This is much more important. Life is about to change on the planet. All right, our sponsor this half hour is Casper.
Glenn Beck.
So you just took the Glenn Beck test, Stu, on the book, Our Final Invention.
I did, and I do want to read it, and as expected, I'm very depressed about our futures.
No, you shouldn't be.
That's what?
Our final invention, James Barat, is the name of it. If you'd rather have it in a fictional form, there is a series called The Singularity Series by
Glenn
William Hertling,
Beck.
Which is also
Mercury.
Really good.